Thank you for having me. My name is Winnie, and I'm a blogger. I blog about self-development.
Hello, and welcome to Obehi Podcast. I'm your host, Obehi Ewafo, and I strongly believe that everyone has a story to share. Now, let's get started with this episode.
Or personal growth. Yeah, I believe that we have all the tools that we need to. It's like upgrading your software. You know, you can be keen on keeping up to date with your software, but you also have a software that runs your life, or maybe you can call it a garden. If you have a garden and you don't tend to your garden, maybe you don't pull out the weeds, and you don't plant the seed that you want. And you may understand, some people might even be having it better, and you think that maybe you don't have the power to do that. So I tell people that you have the power, you have a garden, that's your mind, and you have the ability and the capability to tend to that garden and get whatever it is that you want.
So tell us something about your background. So which part of Kenya are you? Let us even know this part of Kenya where you were born and where you grew up. We are very proud of that. Help us with that.
Yeah, okay. So I was born in Kisii. Kisii is in Nyanza province. So we have like 44 tribes, and my dad is a Kisii from like Western Kenya, and my mom is actually from Tanzania, the neighboring country. So, but I was born in Kisii. She passed on like when I was 10, but that's where I was born.
So and sorry about that. So be strong, yeah, be strong.
No, I had to. So that's where I was born. That's where I went to school. And then I moved to the city. I joined the University of Nairobi, and I started a Bachelor of Arts in Journalism and Media Studies.
That's very great. Journalism and Media Studies. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about when you were still growing up in this province, in this place in Kenya, what do you remember of your childhood? Tell us a little bit more. Get some people jealous.
My childhood was okay, but you know, tragically, some things happened that somehow forced me to grow up really fast because I'm the firstborn. And when our mom passed on, I had to take this role of a deputy, they call us deputy parents. So I had to mature really fast. And, you know, being a firstborn, I had to take care of my siblings and all that. So all this may, you know, I became a deep thinker. I stopped being a child early on. So I developed this curiosity for life, for understanding things in life and all that.
So this question of the firstborn, sometimes the first son and also the first daughter can really be a big burden, and sometimes it make you grow fast. It make you sometimes forget yourself and sort of take care of others. I was in primary two when I lost my dad, and it's okay. Yeah, we have grown now. I was pretty small then, with still my younger ones that were yet to start primary school. So there was my eldest brother who was still struggling at the time. He didn't have anything at the moment. But his own was no longer the issue now, because he had to take care of the entire family. He had to struggle hard. It's because of him, actually, that we managed to find where we are in the world, because he had to provide for all of us, pay the school fees, sponsor all of us, basically, you know. So we actually are grateful to him for all that he done. So when you were talking of be the firstborn and all the responsibility that you have to take, I quickly understand. Taking back to my eldest brother, who have played this role in our life, and of course we are grateful for.
Yeah.
All right.
That's now, really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So it mean whether you are a man or you are a woman, the thing is basically about the same. You see now, Kenya is far away from Nigeria, no? But we are basically living the same life here, no? Or is it the way you see it?
Nigeria, you know, growing up, we have a lot of influence. We have a lot of the Nigerian culture somehow has a heavy influence on how we, mostly the movies. The movies have really given us an idea of how Nigerians behave. Some of it may not be true, but sometimes even when you're talking with your peers, you might even mimic the Nigerian accent and all that. I don't think you guys know a lot about Kenya because I think art is the biggest exporter of a culture. And Nigerian movies growing up, we used to really enjoy them.
That's good. I love that. Yeah. I'm proud of that, though. Yeah, you are right. Art is a bigger exporter of culture. And this is what for some time, we have not been doing in Africa, you know. The West, they've had a way of sort of conditioning us in this sense. No, they have some of these films that were done about Africa, about AIDS in Malawi and South Africa and things like that. Of course, they will do it as they pretend that they are helping you to tell your story, but that is not the story we want to hear. I know there are bad things in Africa, but there are also good things in Africa. It just happens that those who are, some other persons are interested in the negative side of Africa's situation. No?
So, I think.
Yeah, please.
As long as you're not controlling the narratives, as long as you don't have the tools to control how you want people to see you, like for us in Africa, we don't have a news agency that can tell our stories. So then they have that advantage and they use that to their, you know, to drive whatever agenda they want. That's the problem, because when you want to watch something, you turn on BBC or CNN, and this is the story that they're running right at on their end is not the actual reality that's on the ground. So it becomes a challenge. We need to tell our own stories, and this can be done through art and movies and all that, and music, which I think Nigeria is really doing a good job of exporting the African culture to the to the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's absolutely important because living in the diaspora, I can see how much influence that has on the African people. Even those that are African of several generations that have never been to Africa, their grandfather have never been to Africa, but they know that they're from Africa. See this film, talking of maybe the diaspora in the UK or in the US or some other parts of the world, in France, there is a certain sense of pride in them. Somebody sitting down to tell the story. From, you know, now you can also see beautiful people. You can also see your culture be interpreted by people like you without the necessity of trying to appeal some financier, some founder, people that have funded the project in Paris or in New York.
Yeah.
It's a different thing altogether. So I believe that African youth really do have opportunity here to tell their story, because their story, African story of the current time, practically have remained their one-sided narration. So why can't we do this? Let's not just for the sake of doing the storytelling, but also for the purpose
of just telling our side of the story.
And also making it as a business. Why not? See?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I've seen some vloggers on YouTube, the travel vloggers. They document African countries. There's one called Wodemaya. I think he's from Ghana. I think he's really, I follow him on YouTube. I think he's really doing a good job of kind of painting this a very good image of Africa.
We need to. All right, now let's start with the first part of the conversation, the content creation. Tell me how it started with you. We understand that you have a background in journalism and also media, but tell me, how did it get you into what you are doing today?
Yeah, so I started journalism and media. But I had a challenge of finding a job. So in between me trying to find a job, I became a mother, and I somehow started to focus on, you know, raising my son. And then one day something hit me. Like, I'm passionate about this stuff because I was researching a lot and gathering a lot of information. So I thought to myself, why don't you start a blog? Because I realized that I had a passion for this content.
That's interesting. So what do you blog about now that you realize that you have this passion? So what exactly do you blog about? Somebody were to come to your blog, what is he or she going to find?
So I teach people about universal laws of nature. There are so many, but I focus on the ones that are the main, like the 14 universal laws of nature and how they govern our lives and how they determine what comes into our lives. I teach people about your subconscious mind, secrets of the subconscious mind, like you have two parts of your mind, and one part of your mind is the ones that is the one that controls your life. Your conscious mind, the mind that is aware that you are Obehi and you do this for a living and you live here and you're Nigerian, that's the conscious mind. So many people are not aware of the subconscious mind that is running our lives, like 95% of the time. So I try to teach people how the subconscious mind works and how it determines how good or bad our lives can get. I also teach about, I bridge the gap between science and spirituality, because sometimes the things that I talk about can seem quite out there. They can seem quite weird, I can say. So I try to bring in quantum physics to somehow get into the background of what I'm talking about. So I'll somehow try to justify what I'm talking about through quantum physics.
Quantum physics. Okay, I said we're going to talk about this much later. Yeah, yeah, that is going to be important. You help us explain that, what it means and how we can profit from it. I believe that is why people come to read your blog. All right, now, how do you decide what to write in your blog? How do you, because I believe that you don't just write anything. So tell me how you decide your own type of content to create.
First of all, I identify a gap that is there. I identified, like, many people do not know about the subconscious mind. So I sit down and I just, you know, brainstorm. And I decide, what am I going to write about this topic? Like, for example, let's say the subconscious mind. I might decide to write about how the subconscious mind controls your life. And the next time I think maybe I want to write about universal laws of nature. And maybe I'll decide I want to just highlight on the individual laws, just like bullet points and some explanation. And then the next time I'll just now sit down and then decide I'm going to talk about this law. And I also have tools that help me, you know, decide what content people are searching for on the internet. There are tools, like you can, like now you can go on Google, you search, you just focus on the niche. Like now I just focus on spirituality, and when I go on Google, I type law of attraction. The results that come, like, you know, when you go on Google and you have law of attraction and then you have law of attraction quotes, there's that part that the black part that gives you what people are searching for. It kind of fills in. So when I go online, I try to search for what people are searching for. Maybe if it's law of attraction and I write, and the ending is like quotes. So I try to look for the quotes, like through the books that I have, and then I publish a post on that. So I try to balance between what people are searching for and what I want to write about, I want to talk about.
All right. Now, what about your audience? How did you know that this was good? This, your audience is interested in what you are writing. How did you build this relationship with them to be able to understand what they need, and then you go ahead and produce that content? In this sense, the blog articles.
Yeah. So my audience, first of all, I use Pinterest, and the content that I publish, that I pin on Pinterest, the content that gets the most engagement is, I focus more on that content. The content that gets less engagement and less comments, you know, I just figure out that this content is not doing good because people are not interested in this content. So I just try to work with analytics from Pinterest, from Twitter and all that, to kind of, you know, find a roadmap to the content that people like. The content that people respond to most is what I blog more about.
And what do your audience usually say about your content? I mean, what kind of interaction go on among you to sort of help you understand that, okay, they are effectively interested in this type of content?
Yeah, when I first started, I got an overwhelming amount of responses, positive responses from my audience. Actually, I was very surprised. So I'll get emails, I'll get the people commenting on the blog, on the comment section. They will actually tell me that, you know, I never thought about this, or maybe I've heard about the law of attraction, but I never really knew how it works in my life. But after reading this post, I know exactly how these things work, or I know exactly what you're talking about and how I've seen these things work in my life. So mostly the comments, the emails that I get and all that, I can tell what the audience likes and the response that they have.
Mm-hmm. Before, you were saying that you have a background in journalism and also in content.
Yeah.
Okay, in media, of course. I want to understand now immediately that this could have played a role in you choosing to be a content creator. Is that correct, or do you want to expand on that?
No. It did not. It did not at all. When I first enrolled to do journalism, I was just doing it because it's not like I don't like it. I was just doing it because I thought that was going to help me, you know, get where I wanted to go. So I just enrolled to a course that I thought maybe is going to help me in future, but it did not determine what I'm doing right now. I later realized that I wanted to do this later on in my life, actually, almost in my early 30s, in my late 20s. It did not have any influence on the content that I'm doing right now at all.
All right, that's good. So in your content creation, are you only writing blog, or do you also produce other form of content, which could be maybe, I don't know, like video or things like that to complement it?
Yeah, right now I'm starting to shoot videos. Formerly, I was only focused on writing, the writing part, because this blog is like 5 months old. So I'm just starting to build, I'm building it from the ground up, basically. So I started with the article writing and promoting it on social media. Right now, I'm starting to shoot content actually on TikTok and on YouTube. Okay. I haven't even published my first videos yet.
Right.
I'm just on the video editing part.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it was important for you to also add video to what you are creating already? You are creating articles. I mean, how do you know if video is going to be good for you also?
I think right now, videos are doing good on social media, and people, not all people like reading articles, like sitting there and just going through a lot of like a large article. Some people just prefer content, like video content. So I realized that people like short videos. I'm not going to do like the TikTok short videos. I'm just going to do like 10 minutes videos, because many people, I think, prefer video content. And most social media, you know, outlets nowadays are pushing video content out. They think that people like video content.
All right. You are in Kenya.
Yeah.
For the fact that you are a Kenyan blogger, does it have any difference if you were to be maybe an Italian blogger? What I'm trying to understand is there any way that your being Kenya influence your kind of content that you create? Does it reflect your culture or things like that?
The content that I create, it doesn't. Let's say I'm trying to, first of all, when I started writing about this content, I realized that personal development goes hand in hand with spirituality. So when I started researching about spirituality, I realized that they call it New Age spirituality, and it's very popular among millennials. So what I found out about New Age spirituality is that this is the spirituality that was actually practiced in Africa before religion, you know, came in and took over. So I'm just, my content right now, how it reflects to my Kenyan audience is, I'm trying to tell people that this knowledge, I'm trying to gap the bridge between science and spirituality, and telling people that science is now discovering this knowledge, but this knowledge was actually abundant in African spirituality long ago. This is what our ancestors used to practice.
I'm trying to see now, because you know that you want to do something, but you don't yet have all the competence to do that. Because I'm asking the question because there are many people that are listening to you now who also would like to do what you are doing, but they don't know yet how to start, no? Because they feel that they don't have the competence yet. But the fact is that we can actually learn these things, no? So I want you to share with me. How did you learn your skills to be able to create the content that you are creating today, know what to create, how to create it, and how to put it out there so that people can see it? Because, for example, you were the one that contacted me from Kenya that you are a blogger. I was the one that said for you, because I'm looking for people who are creating value in the society so that other people can learn from them. So with me, that you are already doing something. So, I mean, tell me, how do you improve yourself and learn the skills that you need to be able to create content in 2022?
Okay. So first of all, I realized that I had a passion for this knowledge, but I didn't know where to start. Sometimes I think when you need to start something, when you look at the whole picture, it becomes very scary. You start having this, you know, this mindset that maybe I won't be able to make it. So what I did is that when I realized that I had this passion, I started researching on how to start a blog. Basically, I only started to research every day. I will sit down, write down on what I need to do. And I think from there, it started building on. I started, you know, coming up with the name. This is the name of the, I started brainstorming on the name of the blog. I started, you know, starting to narrow down on the hosting companies and all that. So the first thing that you need to do if you want to start something, don't think of the entire picture. Just focus on the first step that you need to take. Even if it means that you need to research each and every single day, spend at least 10 minutes researching about what you need to get done to get started. So for me, I started every single day spending at least 10 minutes researching on how to start a blog, on how to make money from a blog and all that. So the research part is the first step, and everything else will build on that with time.
The research part, what helped you to be able to do this research, to be able to know who your audience is now, because now you are creating content for your audience. But before you started to do that, you first of all need to know who your audience is. Is this part of your research process, the initial phase of it? I mean, how does it work to help you identify who your audience is?
No, so now identifying who your audience is, you just build a persona. So somehow you just start, somehow it's somehow blind. You just build a persona of the ideal of your most ideal audience will be. What you just build a profile of them, what they do for a living, how old are they, where are they from. So you just come up with these ideas yourself. It's called building, in marketing, it's called building a buyer persona, but it also works with content creation. So at first, when you begin, you don't know who your audience is. You just build the buyer persona or the audience persona. You just come up with ideas, like maybe they're 35 years old. This is where they live. This is what they like. Maybe they like personal development. They like improving their lives. They like traveling and all that. You build that profile. When you build that profile, now you create content based on that profile. And then now you send it out. And then you just now get the interaction and the reaction on how this content performs based on that the audience persona that you created.
Mm-hmm. Okay, practically speaking, the people that are in your audience, are they maybe women, are they mainly men, are they young people, married people? Can you share with me in that line? How do you know this is the type of people that you actually creating content for?
No, most of them are actually, I can say most of them are millennials. They are aged between 25. You know, I can see the demographics like from Pinterest and from Google Analytics. So I can tell which part of the world they're coming from. Like right now, most of my audience come from Kenya, like half, and then half come from the United States, and then some other countries are just spread out, just a few percentages. So I can tell where my audience is. I can tell their age and all that.
All right. Now, for somebody that is about to start, no, I would be worried, because also you said before that when you lost your mom, no, that tragic incident, you realize that you have a role to play. As you, in fact, you need to play the role of a mother now to your younger ones, no.
Yeah.
So to do that, of course, I mean, you need money, you need to work, you need to mature in every sense of the word. So, what do you want to say about the monetization of the kind of content that you create? Because that is how you get money at the end of the day. So, help me understand how it works with you.
So with blogging, there are so many avenues that you can use to monetize the blog. So first of all, you can use ads, Google ads. You can apply for ads for Google ads, and then they can run Google on your website. That's first. But most bloggers don't prefer that. Some bloggers just prefer, you know, creating courses. You create a course and then you sell it. When people come to visit your blog because you're giving them value, they can decide to purchase a course that you're selling. You can sell several courses, and then you can do private coaching. You can actually put up a form, a sign up form where people can reach you and they can, you know, they can sign up for your personal coaching where you charge a price. And then you can sell also products. You can have a shop where people can check out. Maybe you have t-shirts. You can also sell those products through your website. People who come to visit your website, they can actually see your shop and have a look at it and select whatever product they have. Maybe you have t-shirts. Maybe you have, you know, branded cups and all that. Anything, or maybe you have an ebook. They can also buy that. So there are many avenues in which you can monetize the blog.
Mm-hmm. And all this frame, method of monetization, of course, each of them is a world of its own, don't? Because maybe you want to sell t-shirt, you are going to have to learn how to develop, design the t-shirt, learn how to monetize, learn how to promote it, which might be different from if you were doing affiliate
marketing. It's a lot of work. You can also do affiliate marketing. I forgot affiliate marketing. You can also do affiliate marketing where you can sell courses, any product that is related to your niche. You can sell and get a commission also. It doesn't have to be your own product.
Because each of them is actually a work of its own. And sometimes you are going to have to try and test with your audience, because I usually say there is no template anywhere. No, you're going to have to test out for yourself, both in marketing and in life in general. Yeah, please go.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying there's no manual to these things. Actually, it's a lot of work, and you have to, sometimes you do trial and error. Even the part of figuring the audience is actually trial and error. So you have to learn on the ground. There's no manual for you to follow.
But for you personally speaking, which one do you think work for you? Which one would you recommend for your friend who want to start monetizing maybe her content and ask your opinion? Which one would you suggest?
Affiliate marketing.
Why affiliate marketing? Is there any reason for that?
Because affiliate marketing, you have the freedom to have different products. Because when you're selling your own product, that's just one product. But when you have an affiliate product that you're promoting, you have a wide range of products that maybe somebody else, like it attracts a wider audience than you're just having one single product. So maybe you might be selling books, other people's books. Maybe you might be selling other people's t-shirts and all that. So affiliate marketing, actually, if you get a good audience, start with affiliate marketing.
Right. Now let's look at Kenya. Look at the Kenyan economy and the young people who, because you are concentrating more on the millennial, you said, right? So. Yeah. What is the, tell me, how much are the people actually patronizing or actually active in terms of content creation? Do you see other people like you who are also doing similar thing that you are doing? So maybe because of this, you can from time to time engage, talk, and share ideas on how to, because no one can do this thing alone. We all need each other to support us, to share our idea, to tell you, oh, this is what I'm doing. Maybe it's, I don't know if it is, because like I said, everything is a test, no? Because there is no template there. So for you to succeed in it, we all need each other, no? So are there other people like you in Kenya that you can confide in, that you can share idea on how to embark on this new journey?
The people that I met mostly, they are people who are doing video content. They're not actually doing the blogging. Most of them actually doing just the video content creation and talking about what I talk about. But I haven't been able to connect to someone who actually does what I do.
It because it's now, of course, you are trying to enter into video creation, or because you've been blogging before. Do you see how people can sort of benefit from each other? Say maybe, for example, you meet another Kenyan content creator who in this case is maybe creating video, and you are creating text in a way that maybe both of you can collaborate with each other, so that you can benefit from her audience and she can also benefit from your audience. I'm looking for the way that we can collaborate now. I mean, these two people that are in Kenya that are working, but in a slightly different angle of the same industry, but can work together to benefit. Do you see a possibility like that?
I haven't seen any possibility for now, but I think I might have to look into that later on. Because as I said, I'm just building everything from ground up right now. And the time that I've been doing this is not, it's like 5 months or less. So okay. I think in future, I'll get a chance to do that.
All right, that's interesting. Now we're going to be moving to the second part of the conversation, which is about how it relates to spirituality, quantum physics, and the rest of it. Can you tell me what is the connection between what you are doing and spirituality? Because you are into content creation, blogging. I want to understand how it connects to spirituality. Let's take it a little bit on that.
Yeah, so first of all, we are taught to believe that we only have this physical body, that we only have control of the physical body and nothing else. But in personal, how it connects to spirituality is that we have three levels of existence. We have the physical, the mental, or the psychological, and then we have the physical, the spiritual, and the mental or psychological. So growing up, we are just taught about physical, we were just taught about the physical world and our mind, and nothing on how to turn to our spiritual side. And our spiritual side is what is where our essence emanates from. So our spiritual side is governed by the subconscious mind, and our physical body is governed by the conscious mind, which is the waking mind that you're aware of. But the subconscious mind just runs below your conscious awareness. You're not conscious of anything that runs in your subconscious mind. It's like a control center for your spiritual side, your spiritual aspect. And that's the connection I try to make and tell people that you have control over your life, over your spirituality, and your spirituality determines everything, how everything in your life turns out.
How do we explain this to an average person on the street? How do we explain this spirituality, the spiritual aspect of the three faces of the human being that you have just described? Tell me about that.
So how we explain it to like an average person, I try to explain it in the sense that we have been taught that the divine creator is like a person and is above, like is a man in the sky. What I try to explain to normal people, I try to tell them that the divine creator, the essence that is running everything in this world, is also within you. So it is like now when you're trying to explain to someone about, let's say, how you connect to the creator, and you tell them that it's outside of you, I try to tell them that it's within you, it's the subconscious mind.
Thank you for that. So in this sense, the creator, we have a way of connecting to this creator without necessarily have to pass through another person or pass through another system, like the mainstream religion. We want us to believe that you need to come to me, then I will connect you to God, but you can actually connect to this God directly. Is that what you're saying? Can you expand on that?
Yeah, so if you want to understand it better, I try to liken it to the soil. The soil is the one that gives rise to vegetation, right? It's the one that enables vegetation to be there. But you cannot say the soil is a male mango tree. It will be wrong. So if you try to think in that sense, the soil is the one that gives life to vegetation. But the soil cannot be the mango tree, it cannot be an avocado tree. It just reminds the soil. So I try to tell people that the divine creator is a divine frequency, is a divine energy, and it's within us, in our subconscious mind. And if it's within us, it submits to our conscious mind. So that's why they say belief. Belief is the most powerful thing, because belief is the one that creates your reality. Whatever you believe to be true becomes true, because this energy is within you, and it makes whatever you believe to be true to become true. So in this sense, I was talking about the vegetation. The vegetation, you can say the vegetation is the god of, I was talking about the soil. You can say the soil is the god of the vegetation, right? Because it's the one that animates every living plant. But the soil cannot become the male mango tree. But as we are told that the soil, now the god, is a man. But the soil cannot become a mango tree. The soil only enables every plant on earth to be alive, to be there. But the soil cannot become a male mango tree or a female avocado tree. The soil is just the soil. It gives rise to everything in the forest. But the soil cannot become a single fruit. You understand?
Yeah. All right. In this explanation, is this something that is in line with the teachings of the Bible, where, for example, of course, according to the Bible, the Christian doctrine and all the tenets of it, we need to somehow connect to somebody or some institution outside of Africans, if we are talking of God, no? So that we have the headquarters in Vatican in terms of Christianity or Christendom. Okay, now they have different branches of faith. Then if you were to take it to the other end, if you are looking at maybe the Muslim, all of them are children of God, yes, but the center of the Muslim spirituality is not really anywhere other than Mecca. So it means for you to then connect, you need to go there and from there, okay, going to heaven, if you want to put it like that. Is it in line with that, or is maybe something different from what we have had before, or what is also available in many other parts, that you don't necessarily need to go to those places? You can actually connect to God wherever you are. You don't need the Bible to know God, because
because God is within you.
Okay, help me with that.
So some of these teachings that are in the Bible, first of all, every religion has some truth in it, but somehow these truths are not taught in the way that they're supposed to be taught. So in the Bible, it says that your body is the temple of God, but you're told to go to a building to find God. How does that connect, you know? So if you want to think about that, you can think about it this way. We are the universe experiencing itself in different forms. We are the universe experiencing itself as a tree, as the grass, as human beings, as different objects. Everything has consciousness, and everything is the universe experiencing itself as different forms. That's why in the Bible it says that your body is the temple of the Lord. And this, the divine essence within you is governed by the subconscious mind. That's why I was trying to connect this with the subconscious mind. Now, if your body is the temple of the Lord, how come there's separation between you and the divine creator? And yet it says that your body is the temple of the Lord. There's no separation between any human being and the divine creator. The only time that there's separation is when you die. The body is just like an avatar. It's like a meat suit for the divine essence that is like using your body to experience itself in this world.
Okay, say maybe for example, this is a person who have never been indoctrinated into the mainstream religion. Does this person still have the possibility of experiencing this this spirituality in a way that they can really be fully be connected to God without necessarily through Islam or Christianity, something like that?
Yeah, first of all, you mentioned that indoctrination. The moment you are indoctrinated into religion, it becomes very hard for you to understand that you have the power within you, because it's all about directing our power outside of us. And, you know, there's always one answer to everything. If you're experiencing problem in your marriage, you're told to pray. If you're experiencing maybe job problems or money problems, you're told to pray. So there's always one fix to every problem. So if you tell somebody who's been indoctrinated, like, okay, you have the power to change your life, and this power is within you, is within your own subconscious mind, it will be very hard for them to understand. But for someone who's open and who's maybe questioning this stuff, if I try to tell them that you are the one that is responsible for changing your life, and I tell them, okay, if you're experiencing relationship problems, I tell them there's something that you need to learn from that. There's something that any problem that you have, remember, you have the three planes of existence. You have the physical, the spiritual, and the psychological, or the mental processes. The spiritual is like the main essence, is the truest version of you. Your soul and your spirit is the truest version of you. Anytime you have a problem in your physical life, maybe you have a problem with your spouse, or you're having a disease, anytime you have anything that is bothering you in this life, is your soul or your spirit trying to tell you something? So first of all, you need to understand what is this pattern, because sometimes it shows up in patterns. It can be maybe you're attracting narcissists in your life, and you can even move to a different country and you're still attracting maybe narcissistic friends or a narcissistic partner. So if you're having a pattern in your life, I tell people, this is your soul trying to tell you something. Maybe you have something within you that is attracting that narcissist. So you have to resolve it within yourself, and then the outside will not show up as that reality anymore. So anything, any problem that you have in your physical world, there's a disease in your spiritual essence.
All right. Now, somebody come to you and said he or she want to resolve this problem. What would you do? What are the process to help this individual rectify that problem from a spiritual dimension so that it doesn't manifest in the physical or in other areas of the person's life?
Yeah, so there are many ways. There's no one, like I can say, one size fits all process. First of all, you have to work with the person, and what can work for one person cannot work for the next person. So for instance, there's a way you can identify, maybe you're having a negative pattern and maybe you're attracting problems in a certain area of your life. First of all, we'll start by you acknowledging the meaning that you give to something. The moment you start giving your reaction, whether it's negative or positive, it further perpetuates that situation. So first of all, what I'll tell someone is, you need to remove the meaning. You need to remove your judgment from that situation, first of all. Accept that you try to think of it like, let's say it's your child. Your child is acting out because they need attention from you. So you'll need to view it from that perspective and say, okay, this problem is manifesting in my life. First of all, I need to accept that it's there. I need to like listen to it. It's like someone coming to you with a problem and you have to sit down, and now you just listen to that person without persecuting them, without judging them, or just, you know, not trying to, you just have to listen to them. So you remove your judgment from that situation. You accept that it's there. And next, you have to write down all the mental, the story that you say around that thing, the story that you tell around the situation. Because there's something that you are justifying. There's something that you're justifying the situation being there. So some of it may be the childhood trauma you experienced as a child. So you'll have to do some, there's special meditation you have to do to release that energy from within yourself. Because anything that is manifesting is a disease in a spiritual essence, is an energy that has gone wrong, so to speak. So this energy needs to be resolved. It needs to be, it's like somehow having a balloon, and this balloon, or maybe a container, and you put pressure in it. The more pressure you put in it, like the more emotion and the more you react to that situation, the more it becomes so pressurized. But the moment you remove your judgment from that situation, you release the pressure just a little bit. And you can do this through breath work. You can do this through meditation. Your inner child, or the subconscious mind, is also called the inner child. It's the one that is trying to speak to you. So it may be something that you experienced as a child, or a trauma that is now manifesting as a problem in your current life right now. So you can either do breath work, you can do meditation. There are meditations which you can just sit down and talk to your inner child and just try to like listen to them. You just watch the emotion rise up in you without giving judgment. It can be likened to releasing the pressure from a container that's very, very hot. That's the emotion now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can do it. There are many methods. Some people just do it even without realizing. You don't even need someone to help you do that. Nobody can help you more than you can help yourself. It's like swimming. Someone can only teach you the kicks and the strokes, but at the end of the day, you have to swim in the water. You have to do the kicks by yourself. So what spiritual teachers do, they just guide you. They just show you the strokes or the kicks and all that. But at the end of the day, you have to swim in the waters.
There is a responsibility on your part. No one can do. Yeah, so people can help you. You know, the saying goes that you can drive maybe a cow or a cattle to the sheep, to the stream, but you cannot force it to drink water. If you want to drink water, you will drink. If you don't want to drink water, you can stay there and die of thirst. No. Yeah.
Yeah, because these things are very hard. You have to be determined and to be disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and healing is not easy. It's very hard. You have to be determined.
Yeah, but it needs to be done.
Yeah.
All right. Now, energy. Mm-hmm. Energy. That is a word that you've said a number of times. And physics also. And now we're going to be combining the two, actually. Maybe they are going to actually be the same. Quantum physics. That is something that I'm trying to see. What is it? How do you interpret it using quantum physics? I want to believe that a lot of people don't understand what is even meant by quantum physics. Talking about spirituality, talking about quantum physics. Can you do a little explanation of that?
So, first of all this knowledge was present in Africa a long time ago. I think these terms, like they seem big, the quantum physics terms, these are just now the Western terms, but these things used to be practiced in Africa a long time ago. So quantum physics is the study of matter at the subatomic level. It just studies matter at the tiniest microscopic level. So first of all, how quantum physics ties in with all this is that our thoughts have the ability to influence the world around us. And this has been proven by quantum physics, because quantum physics is what they did, they took apart the atom and they realized that the atom is actually, so first of all, everything in nature is made up of atoms. Your phone, your body, your thoughts and feelings, everything is made up of atoms. When they take apart the atom, they realize that the atom is just vibrating energy. So now this is where quantum physics is very important, because when you start telling people that your thoughts have an influence in the world around you, they look at you like maybe this is witchcraft. How the whole concept of quantum physics ties in is that it tries to validate like your thoughts and perceptions about life have an effect on that, on your reality. What you think about something affects it. So this is how quantum physics kind of ties in. So for instance, I was telling you about how everything in the universe is made up of energy. That's the biggest realization that quantum physicists came up with. I think it was early in the 1920s. They realized that everything, that before it was believed that the universe is just mechanical, but they just realized that the universe is actually made up of vibrating energy. And everything in the universe vibrates at different frequencies. And this is a very, very broad subject, which I will not go into deeply right now, because at some point they even say that even physical objects are not actually physical. The phone, like the buildings, they are all vibrating energy at different frequencies. And actually, I think Nikola Tesla, back in the day, if you know about me, Nikola Tesla is the one who said that everything, if you want to find the secrets of the universe, you think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. I think Nikola Tesla was able to develop a device that was able to create, like, to take apart a building because of that frequency. Because if you get to the frequency of something, you will take it apart. You understand? If you figure out the frequency of this building and you develop a device, you can actually, this building can crumble into pieces in minutes. So they realize that everything, every cell in your body has a frequency. A sick cell has a different frequency from a healthy cell. Your heart, everything has a frequency, including your thoughts and feelings. So if you're in a negative state, you attract negative circumstances into your life. If you're in a positive state, it's like basically creating your own luck. And also the second part about quantum physics is that there's something called the observer effect. The observer effect is that they took the smallest part of atoms are made of protons, neutrons, and electrons. So they took electrons and shot it through a double slit. It's called the double slit experiment. When they shot electrons through the double slit when someone is observing that experiment, it changes. when someone is not observing it, it just becomes a wave. A wave is like a potential of energy, just like a wave of energy. So they shoot electrons through. I wish I had the diagram to illustrate. They shoot electrons through a double slit, and then they observe how the electrons hit the board on the other end. So they realize that when you observe, the act of observation changes the nature of what is being observed. Your observation disturbs what is being observed. When you're not observing something, when you're not observing the electrons, they just behave as waves. It's just like potentials. When you're observing the electrons, they collapse into particles. I know this sounds very confusing. Let me just try to explain.
Yeah, go ahead.
So this means that they concluded that everything actually exists as a potential. It is not until you observe, you make an observation, that something turns from a potential into an actuality. Everything is like vibrating energy with infinite potentials.
That is very interesting now. That is very interesting. Please go ahead. It says that all these potentials are available for us. What becomes of it depends on what we do with it. Because in itself, I to believe that all the energies in the universe are neutral. They are not good or bad.
If you
make them good, they are good. If you make them bad, they are bad. We put a lot of infinite power in our hands. I don't know if I'm making sense.
You are right on point. You're right on point. So what this means is exactly what you're saying. Everything in the universe is not good or bad. It's the meaning that you give something that somehow molds and shapes itself to suit your perceptions. Are you understanding? So can you picture this? Can you imagine you're in darkness? There's nothing but pitch blackness, and you have a flashlight, and you're moving through the night with just the flashlight. Your attention is the flashlight in the darkness. So the part that you can't see is the possibilities, the infinite possibilities that are available for you. Your awareness now is the flashlight that is helping you move through the night. The night is just the infinite potentialities of reality and how your life can play out. So first of all, I started realizing this back when I realized that I was pregnant. All I could see, because when I realized that I was pregnant, I think it was all that I was thinking about. So when I was going about my business, all I could see were pregnant women, heavily pregnant women. It is because I brought this idea of pregnancy into my awareness. Once I observed, like with my thoughts, like, okay, I'm pregnant. Everywhere I go, I'll go on the supermarket and I'm queuing a heavily pregnant woman who just come up behind me. Everywhere I'll go, I'll see pregnant women, like for months. It was so weird, and it will happen in very weird circumstances. But before, I could just see them, like it was just like here and there once in a while. But during that period, all I could see were pregnant women, heavily pregnant women everywhere. You can also try this experiment. Try to make an intention of seeing, a red or a pink, something that is very unique. Make an intention of seeing a pink Range Rover everywhere you go. Just close your eyes, or maybe take a picture and look at it and make sure that I see this Range Rover. And I kid you not, everywhere you turn, you'll see that pink Range Rover.
In the place where I live, no, before we have our son, there is a school here. I just pass across. Yeah. I never really know what is happening. No? Not that I don't see them, they are there, but because I never pay attention, I don't really know the integrity of it. But my son is beginning to grow up. We are taking him to school. Now I begin to come to terms with the reality of how many students are actually in front there that I just walk across and never really pay attention to.
Exactly.
I really believe this infinite possibility around us just because we are not paying attention.
Let me tell you something. From the moment you're born, there are infinite permutations of your life that are really worked out. That's why it says, this thing's actually, I told you these things, The Bible used to be a very powerful spiritual knowledge that was, I believe, was somehow, some things were taken out and some things were just left. But the crumbs of this knowledge are still in the Bible. There's a verse that says that creation is already complete. And there's a law in thermodynamics that says that energy cannot be created or destroyed. So it means that, let's say you've been financially struggling and then somehow you become very rich. The version of you that has been struggling and the version of you that is rich, they are all potential that have always existed, because you cannot create that reality, because energy cannot be created or destroyed, just changes form. So every version of you that you can think of is already exists. The only reality that you can experience is the flashlight. Now I was saying the flashlight in the darkness, the attention that you're focusing on your life right now, you're able to experience this reality, because the more you're giving it meaning, the more it is molding itself. The more it's like you are, the meaning that you give to something is the one that enables it to be there. Your attention is the one that enables something to be actually.
All right, so how you did make mention of the fact that most of this knowledge we already available in Africa, no? Which is true. There is no way it cannot be true, because this is the place that humanity first started to form society, you know?
Yeah.
But many of this knowledge, I'm trying to, the curiosity is, in what form did we understand this knowledge then? Because there are a lot of things that we don't know. There are a lot of things that we are not able to know. In what form did we experience this knowledge, and what was this used for at the time? We have any knowledge of that?
So first of all, the knowledge was wiped out clean, because first of all, most Africans did not record history or anything. It's only in Kemet or in Egypt is where they recorded everything. But you know, in Kemet, the library of Alexandria was burned down into ashes, burned down for 6 months. So all this knowledge was lost. But crumbs of this knowledge, people are beginning to know that actually the Bible is plagiarized from ancient Kemetic spirituality. The Bible is plagiarized from Kemetic spirituality. Yeah.
For example, so, take the 12 commandments. Take it for the 42 negative confessions.
The 42 laws of Ma'at were the 10 commandments. Yeah. So people are beginning to join the dots, like where Jesus was Horus. The divine, what is it called? The Holy Trinity. The Holy Trinity, the original Holy Trinity. We can even find some pictures, actually, because Kemet dates back thousands of years before Christianity was even, before the Bibles even combined. So the original Holy Trinity is the Father, the Mother, and the Child. So they kind of twisted that knowledge and rebranded, like gave the characters English names and all that. And people will actually not believe this, that this is true. Like the 10 commandments are the 42 laws of Ma'at. They were like affirmations, the Holy Trinity. We have even the most recent one that I discovered is Ishtar. Ishtar, does it ring a bell? Easter. So, you know, Africans, they knew that we are the universe experiencing itself in different forms. So they knew that the creator is not up there, but is everything is like this pervading essence in nature. So they kind of tried to personalize things. Africans knew that we are the universe, the divine creator experiencing itself in different forms, right? So they knew that the creator is not like a man in the sky. They knew that the creator is a divine energy, is a divine frequency, and it was found in everything. It was found in nature, in cycles. So they studied all the universal laws. And that's why like ancient Kemet was like the most advanced civilization of all. Up to now, you cannot match that civilization in ancient Kemet. So for instance, they realized that, why do you think Easter does not lie on the same day? It's always on the full, Easter always lies on the equinox, the time when the day and night are equal length. So they knew that the equinox was the time when they named this, the female goddess, they named her Ishtar. And they used bunny rabbits to symbolize fertility. So they gave this, so Ishtar comes from ancient Kemet, is what now was adopted by Christianity, and was a, they say that it was the resurrection of Jesus. So what you should ask yourself is, what do bunny rabbits, what do rabbits have to do with the birth of Jesus? Rabbits symbolizes fertility. So they gave reference to, they acknowledge the seasons and all that.
All right. So this knowledge, what was it actually used for among the African people? This, because I want to state again that these are advanced knowledge. And to you, what you were saying, the civilization of Egypt can really not be matched today. Even scientifically speaking, the explanation of how the pyramid was built is still, it still remains critically
still a mystery
to many people in the world today.
Yeah, it's because they studied nature. Yeah. It's because they studied nature and they knew all the secrets too. They knew most of the secrets. They actually knew, like, we are revolving around the sun, that they knew about the stars without even use of a telescope. It's because they studied nature. And one thing that I'm against, I can't say against, one thing that I diverge greatly from Christianity is, we are told that all the answers are contained in a book. We are told that everything that you need to know is contained in a book. And this book was edited by a human being, and human beings lie. But nature cannot be tampered by a human being. The sun will always be the sun. Even if you go to the Philippines, even if you go to the Amazon forest, the sun always works the same. So we are supposed to study from nature. You're not supposed to study from a book. Yes, you can record this knowledge, but this knowledge is subject to corruption. Yeah? But nature cannot be corrupted. You cannot corrupt.
It doesn't even make sense for the fact that, you know, because the Bible at the point begins to even contradict itself now, that God is the love of all. That this same God, when I start choosing people, start sanctioning war, start sanctioning, approving slavery, and all sort of stupidity that men were practicing as a tradition. Which, because we are now evolved more now, we now begin to understand that that was a way of doing things that was wrong. This is not right. If God, so it means that God doesn't even know too that was right. That was wrong. Which means that God is the same level with man. So coming to the Bible itself, the formation of the Bible, coming to edit out a lot of books at the Council of Nicaea, which means that God doesn't even know what he was doing. Is that what we are talking about in this Bible tradition and Christianity? Of course, people don't think. People literally just don't think. So they don't know most of these things. So we just
but
go
and told,
answer, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. But do you even know what you are doing? Do you understand what you are doing, literally speaking?
You are told not to question this knowledge. You are told that you don't question God. But how can you say you don't question God and it's a man who wrote this Bible and they had the authority to edit it? How can you not question something that a human being edited? You have to question it. Mm-hmm. Because most people are living in fear of hell. Hell is not even real, first of all. Hell was invented. Mm? And in ancient African spirituality, they knew that hell and heaven are all states of consciousness that you can experience here. You can experience your hell here, and you can experience your heaven here. It all depends on your states of consciousness. If you're always living in fear, you're living in hell. If you're living in misery and suffering, you're living in hell. If you're living, you're at peace and you're feeling joy, you're living in heaven. Heaven and hell are only states of consciousness. And, you know, I haven't been able to go deeply into decipher this knowledge. Mostly I started with, you know, just being neutral because I was kind of scared to start questioning these things, but I was going into that direction. Later on, I plan to go into that direction and actually tackle these things one by one. So, for instance, the biggest thing that you were asking earlier on about how I can tell the average person about the subconscious mind. You cannot tell a person about the subconscious mind without first of all telling them, disapproving the fact that God is not a man in the sky. You have to tell them God is not a man in the sky. And then from now on, you can now start building up. Because when I was first discovering this knowledge, I was still in that indoctrination like box. So I was thinking like, okay, God is a person in the sky, but I'm being told that it's this power is within me. I was having a lot of trouble connecting that, because I have been taught all my life that God is a man in the sky.
Not just a man in the sky. It's a man that looks like Italian in the sky.
Yeah, exactly.
That be either from Germany,
and God speaks English.
Or from France or from UK. That is a man we have in the sky, that's living in the sky. You know, we have been reduced to the state of children. We are infants.
Yeah, yeah. Kabisa. Sorry, I said Swahili. I just spoke, like, I don't know if you understand. Kabisa means exactly. It's just an automatic thing that.
But that is fine. That is natural.
Yeah. So Kabisa means exactly in Swahili. Exactly. Yeah. Like, you're on point. Yeah. So I was saying, when you try to explain to an average person about the subconscious mind, and they have this indoctrination, they believe that God is a man in the sky, You cannot reconcile the two ideas. You have to first of all tell them God is not a man in the sky. God is not a person. God is a divine energy and is within you, and you have full control of this energy. And there's a verse in the Bible that says the woman submits to the man. God is not a woman, but God is feminine energy. God works like a woman. God reproduces after your strongly held beliefs. The meaning that you give, let's say a certain situation in your life, this energy that is within you, it seeks to reproduce that energy. It seeks to reproduce that thing.
Talking about how to get people to understand this knowledge so that they can apply it in their life. Because in Africa, in the ancient time, it was applied in the life of people. It was so applied to the point that you didn't need to go and go to a place to start putting it in your, because from childhood, you have been getting used to it. It becomes very natural for you to just practice it. So how do we get this knowledge into the mind of the people? That is the question.
Yeah, so I was, first of all, the people who can be able to use this knowledge are the ones who are asking questions. If you start asking questions, because there are so many contradictions in the Bible, so if you start questioning this knowledge, first of all, so many things do not make sense. So if you believe that God is a man in the sky, first of all, it cannot work in your life because you're giving your power away to something outside of you. Can you picture this? Can you imagine there's a large house in a plantation, or maybe like on a large farm, just one house, and then maybe adjacent to the forest. And a child is looking for their mother. And you are standing at the entrance of this building, of this house. The mother just got in, and you saw the mother get inside that house. But the child is coming, and they're crying, and they're saying, where is my mom? I can't find my mom. And you point them towards the forest, and you tell them, your mom went into that forest. What is your intention, you? Are you trying to mislead that child not to find their mom? Why are we told that God is outside of us? Did Europeans bring God to Africa, or they came to sever the relationship between Africans and God? Because we are told that Africans did not know God. Africans knew that God is within us. We are the universe experiencing itself as everything. They acknowledged the divine essence in nature, in water, and all that, and all the seasons. They knew that we are the universe expressing itself. How a normal person can be able to understand this is, you tell them that this divine essence is within you. You are an eternal soul having a temporary human experience. You are not your body and you are not your mind. Your mind and your body are just tools for your soul to navigate through this life. Once the body dies, you don't die. You don't die. Energy cannot be destroyed. You just transition and then you incarnate throughout many lifetimes until your soul learns the lesson that it needs to learn to ascend, you know? So when you tell people that this divine essence is within you, so how can you use it to better your life? First of all, you have to identify you have beliefs that run subconsciously. you have beliefs that you are programmed with as a child. And these beliefs are the ones that attract your life. They attract, they determine everything that comes into your life. You need to reprogram these beliefs. Your subconscious mind is subjective. It only, it just submits to your, what you think and what you feel. It doesn't have a mind on its own. Your conscious mind is the one that has to give orders to your subconscious. I can say orders because your subconscious mind just submits to your conscious mind. So you need to give orders and to give orders to your subconscious mind to get what you want.
It and will on the basis of what are you supposed to give this order? Is it like, okay, you have an objective, you define where you want to go, like, okay, I want to be this, you know, like that is this popular understanding. Mm. What you need to do is to first of all choose your destination. Where do you want to go? Figure it out, and then go back and continue to work towards it, and you will eventually get there. How do we define this objective that we want so that we then condition our subconscious mind? That is the conscious mind conditioning the subconscious mind to take us to that destination we want to go.
Yeah. So, first of all, can you picture maybe you have a cup, and this cup is filled with water, and the water is a let's just say a cup that has maybe you have beliefs about money, you have beliefs about how the world works, about relationship, about what you perceive of people. So whatever is contained in your cup, in your consciousness now, your awareness, whatever is contained in this, it was polluted, let's say polluted, or maybe it was made to be better, depending on the subconscious programs you received as a child. During the first 7 years of your life, you received programming on how the world works. You were given perception. You are given, it's like a filter on how you're supposed to view reality. So this filter may be a negative filter. So it's like a cup. So maybe you acquired beliefs that money is scarce, or, you know, rich people are going to be burned in hell or something like that. So this made you to have a scarcity mindset. So if you identify you have something that is lacking in your life, first of all, you need to clean up this cup. This cup will naturally fill with whatever you need, but you need to, first of all, to empty it. You need to remove the pollution out from this cup that is, let's say that you have a cup and a glass of water that has some dirt on it. So you need to clear this dirt by reprogramming the subconscious beliefs, the negative, maybe you have a scarcity mindset, maybe you are attracting very negative relationship, maybe you have addictions and all that. You need to clear this cup so that this cup can fill with. It's like a garden. It's like having a garden. So the weeds, the limiting beliefs are the weeds. So you need to pull out the weeds and you need to plant whatever seed that you need so that you can get to whatever thing that you want. So the first thing that you need to do is repetition. The subconscious mind responds to repetition. You need to repeat something until you start believing it, until you start having that emotion within you. First of all, you need to write it down. If there's something that you want, after you start, you write like, maybe I am healthy. My body is always healthy. You write that until, you repeat it until it becomes an emotion. It becomes an emotion within you, you start to manifest that reality. You have to repeat it until you start to feel it. You start to feel an emotion within you. That's number one. Number two, you can visualize. You can visualize yourself having whatever it is that you want. Remember, I told you about the flashlight in the darkness. The reality that you're experiencing right now is the one that you're shining your attention on. When you visualize, you tap into that potential reality that is already, it's already a potential. You're just tapping into that. So when you visualize, you are shining a light on that potential reality that you want to experience. And when you visualize enough and you involve the emotion, it will become a reality.
And maybe looking around the people that you see around you, okay, in this case, you're in Kenya. Mm. Do you see them to be awake to this consciousness? Because consciousness is actually light. But in most of the cases, people are just walking, sleeping. or they are sleepwalking. They are not aware of their experience in life. They are just playing. They are just repeating the program somebody have put in their head. No?
Yeah.
And like you said also in the past, it is a hard work for you to reawaken yourself, for you to question the reality that I've been giving to you so that you can form another reality. It's a hard work.
Yeah.
And many people don't want to do the hard work. So tell me, when you walk around, what do you see in people? You see them to be awake, want to be awake, or they don't really want to be awake. They prefer to be in this state of ignorance, just following the follower.
Most people that I see around me, most of them, I cannot say that. I'll say the people, the content that the Kenyans that are on TikTok, most of them, they talk about this knowledge. They question things. They are very woke. The Kenyans on TikTok, but the ones that very few close friends, actually very few of them, but the rest are just no. They just believe that they are just in this you can say this sleep.
What do you think can be done for people like you, maybe through content creation? Let's say those who have seen the light, to help others who have not seen the light. I mean, what do you think can be done to sort of help others?
First of all, the hardest part I think will be to actually shine a light on the contradictions that are very, there's so many contradictions in the Bible. If you start telling people that this thing and this thing doesn't make sense, people will start questioning this stuff. And also how I write, sometimes I try to quote some of these quotes and actually tell people what they actually mean. Like the part of the woman submitting to the man, it's not supposed to be, and the Bible is actually said to be allegorical. It means that it has a hidden meaning behind it that you need to interpret. So sometimes telling people like, okay, this actually means this and that, you can actually pinpoint the discrepancies in the Bible, and you tell people, for example, you're told that Adam and Eve had how many sons? They had three sons or two sons. and then you ask people, they say that they went out into the world and married wives. Why did they get these wives? Mm-hmm. Where did they get these other people? Because they're told the first people were only two people. And they're told that the first thing that is, first of all, there's a pattern in the Bible, actually. There's a pattern of somehow subconsciously demonizing women. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that?
This is why I was saying before that if the Bible was the word of God, it means that this God is also at the level of man.
Yeah.
It means a level of man in both imperfection, evolving, not yet understanding what is going to be the future. It's not a kind of God that is even qualified to create the universe. Because this God haven't yet understand what is going to happen. Men now evolve more, and they come to see there are error in their fabrication of the story, and they go and start modifying it, for example, the law that we make. If we put it in this context, then it is obvious that when the Bible was written, it was written based on the level that men were at the time.
Yeah.
That is how the society was run then. Because slavery at the time was legal. So in the Bible, slavery was legal.
But it was legal.
If this is the word of God, God should have known that slavery is not legal.
Yeah.
For the fact that he didn't know, mean that the God that we are talking about in the Bible is like a man. Therefore, God is a man, and therefore, it's all fabrications.
Yeah.
So yes, the Bible sort of demonized women. It is true. Even today, it's still women have still not been given opportunity to play the same role like men. Take, for example, in the Catholic Church, how many times have you heard of a woman becoming the Pope? Have you ever heard any time?
No.
Okay, let's go back to the story again.
Mm.
The Bible was actually copied from ancient African tradition, like you were actually alluding to. It is true.
Yeah.
In those traditions, men and women were having very high position. It's not like this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In my place, no, where there is this refiguration of certain deities, you have man and woman sitting like this. This is how they sit, both of them. It's not like a man standing, then the woman must be under. Of course, this is not in all representation. I'm talking of it's a representation that I've seen.
Yeah.
So yes, this is the way it is because that is how some men decide that they want to configure the society. It is not the work of God. It is the work of men.
Yeah. So what I actually learned is that there was no patriarchy in Africa before Christianity. So I actually learned that the Bible has subliminal messages that, you know, the agenda, they want to drive a certain agenda. They put subliminal messages in that. Like now, somebody that doesn't need to tell you, like, God hates women. But you see the thing that God does to women, and there's a sin that is pinned, the original sin that is pinned on women. Somehow, God treats women differently, but in words, the actions are different. The actions do not match with the words. In words, they say that God loves everybody. God loves people equally, but God treats women differently. So they're all subliminal messages. And I actually realized that patriarchy did not exist in Africa before. There was no such thing as feminism in Africa because there were women leaders who ruled kingdoms. So all these were like, it was like a recipe that they came to, you know, they couldn't colonize Africans physically. That's another thing that people don't know. It's not the guns that colonized Africa. It was something more powerful than any physical weapon that was ever created, because you keep this knowledge is now being passed down through generations. We are actually doing it to ourselves. We are actually colonizing ourselves. You know, growing up, I used to wonder why, like, women are treated differently. I used to wonder why, like, why do people, even the women themselves, actually, they treat other women with a much harsh, you know, tone as compared to men. So I used to wonder why was that. And then I came to realize that patriarchy did not even exist in Africa. So I noticed a pattern. The colonizers couldn't colonize Africans physically. They came so many times, they were beaten, hands down. They went back and regrouped and they sat down. And then it's like the story of, you know, they just sat down and thought to themselves, what are we going to do to colonize these people? It is not the guns just came to finish the job. And the moment that Africans will start worshiping God, like our ancestors did before Christianity, is when Africa will be liberated.
And you know, you were saying, I think, who is this African-American writer who said, when you educate, when you miseducate a person as a slave, you tell him, sit at the back. You just need to do it for a certain amount of time. The person come to understand it. At the point, you don't need to tell him, go sit at the back. He will know that is his position. That is what education does. And because in Africa, we happen to have gotten education from the oppressor, even to date, we still expect the oppressor, or maybe let's call them the competitors, so that we can give them a better word for it. We still expect them to subsidize us in Africa. Mm-hmm. If you were talking about marketing, that is suicide. As serious as that is, that is how African governments still function. We expect our competitors to sponsor our existence. A good example, if there is a war between Ghana and Nigeria, who is going to supply the weapon for the war? It's probably going to come from Russia or maybe United States or maybe some other countries in Europe.
Yeah.
But the question is, why is Ghana not able to produce weapons to protect themselves? Why are Nigeria not able to do that? The reason is also very simple. It's not because they are not physically able to do it. It's because our government, this representative, have bought into the idea that somebody is coming to help them. That don't worry, don't do the work, we will help you. But the question is, have you asked yourself, the person that is coming to help you, what if one day you offend him? At that time you have a problem. How is he going to help you?
Yeah. So, and this mentality of having like, we need to be saved. Where do you think that comes from? That we need to be saved? If we worship a white man on the cross, and then we're told this is your savior, and this person does not even look like you, and you're told that, for centuries you were just a bunch of uncivilized savages who didn't know everything. You didn't know God. You didn't have a history. All our history has been wiped away, and then we have been given false history. And then we're told that this white man on the cross is the one that came to save you. So can you imagine how many Africans died during the slave trade? The worst atrocities that have been done on them, the worst violation of human rights. So if you question this knowledge and you ask people, the blood that was spilled of those millions of Africans is not enough. Just one man's blood is enough, is the one that is coming to save you. Why didn't God come and save the slaves that were being shipped across the Atlantic Ocean? So these are the things that people need to question. People need to question a lot of things. And I think this is the age of information. People need to question a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. That is why we are here. That is why we need to keep talking. Because that is the thing that we need to do. It's not, I think the salvation of Africa doesn't really require weapons. It doesn't require army the people with gun as a fight. No. How Africa got there was not through shooting in the first place. It was deconstructing their head. So that, like I was saying before, they begin to fight themselves. They don't need to fight other people now. They are fighting themselves. So it becomes very easy. Because look at it. The Europeans that need to come to Africa to take the Africans, they are very few in number. They didn't even have the sophistication of weapon as they would want us to believe. Because at the time, everybody was almost about equal. There was no this high technology at the time. There was no drone. Gun was really... It was... You see, the thing is that we need to believe in who is narrating the story. Yeah. Because we still give this privilege of other people to tell the story for us, we are going to suffer. We deserve to suffer until we realize that is an error on our part. Then we start to talk for ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay, the other day, I was interviewing an Egyptologist. I just published the video today. Then at the point I was asking her, okay, let's look at it this way. Now, when Egyptologists study Egypt, and they say there are another discipline that study African history, are we saying that Egypt are other people other than Africans? Why don't we just say we are studying African history? If you are studying European history, study the Roman history, are you studying other people's history or studying the European? You know, the thing is that we need to question everything. We need to question everything. Nothing is spared from this. That is how we're going to be able to understand.
There are a lot of lies that have been that have been fed to us throughout, I can say throughout like four centuries. Our history has all been erased, and we've been given false history that Africans did not know any. Actually, Africans invented almost everything. I think this is why they needed to take Egypt out of Africa. They rebranded Egypt. It was not even called Egypt, so that they can hide these facts from our history, so that they can eliminate these facts from our history. That's another thing. Because actually, I didn't even know Egyptians were black until a few years back. I didn't even know like Egyptians were black people and that they invented everything. They invented almost everything that we use right now. So all this history has been hidden for a reason. When you erase a person's history, you can tell them whatever you want to tell them about themselves, and they can believe it.
That is it. All across Africa. In Nigeria today, if you go any corner, the other day I was interviewing a person. He said me in his own street there are only three churches. I'm not talking of in the quarter. In his own street.
Yeah.
How can we live this kind of life? We are just feeding lies. We are becoming a self-perpetrator of ignorance.
Exactly.
Because now you look at ancient Kemet, or what they prefer to call Egypt. Now, what is the justification? That, because now I will ask the professor, the lecturer, the scholar. Because you talk of Nubiologists talking of the study of Nubia, then Egyptology talking of the study of Egypt. I said, okay, now let's look at it. Nubia and Egypt or ancient Kemet, they are just two neighbors. How can you form two civilizations in just these are the I want not talking of the same people here? Because if we are talking
they're
of the
exactly
same people
the
now,
same people.
If we are talking of the same people now, we are disqualifying the Europeans. But the Europeans don't want to accept that. They believe that Egypt are people other than the African people. Now the question is, where are they coming from, these people? Are they coming from France? Are they coming from Germany? Are they coming from the Caucasus Mountain? You see, because we don't question them, we think it is normal. But it is not normal.
Yeah.
There's nothing normal about it.
There's nothing normal, and there's a lot of, we learn lies, we learn false history. Like, it's like you have to come out of education and start now re-educating yourself about Africans, about who Africans were truly were. Because in school, we learned that there was this great migration that was happening all across Africa, that the people who live actually in East Africa migrated somewhere from, I don't know, from West Africa. So the people who currently live in African countries are not the same people. They're not the original people who used to live there. But all that Africans used to migrate. But there's one thing that is omitted from that explanation. How can you build a civilization and then choose to just up and leave and just leave everything? How can you build a civilization, let's say for 50 years, you build a sewer system, you leave everything, and then you just choose to migrate and you just up and go and just go live in the jungle. Africans were running away from something. They were running away from Kemet because Kemet was being invaded. Kemet has been invaded so many times, but it's not even recorded in history. The original occupants of Egypt are actually Africans. The last people to invade Egypt were Arabs. That's why you have Arabs right now. But Kemet has been invaded by the Romans, by the Greeks, by the Persians. It has been invaded so many times because there was treasure there. People don't just come to steal from poor people. They came to steal from, they found Africans as kings and queens. And that's what is omitted from history.
That is something important that you said there. So why the Europeans and Africans steal it? They are because the Africans are poor. If they are poor people, are you looking for, what are you going to steal? How can you steal from poor people?
You cannot steal from a poor person. A thief does not go to invade a slum. They go to a rich person to invade there. They came to Africa. They found Africans were kings and queens. Africa was thriving. It was not only in Kemet. All across Africa, there were civilizations. The great ruins in Zimbabwe. They were all in Benin. They were the Benin Kingdom. All across Africa, Africa was thriving. So they came to Africa to get a piece of the goodies. Yeah,
the reason they were doing this is because they didn't have. You know, another thing also that we need to clarify there is that why I was saying the other day, because we also talked about religion on another episode. I said, okay, the reason that the Christianity was structured the way it was structured was because at the time, there was no better reference quality other than what was happening in Africa. Because if the European knew, if they had another knowledge other than that, they wouldn't copy Africa. They would simply put their own there. For the sake, for the fact that they have to put, right, for example, go and take for the two negative confessions and from there extrapolate the Ten Commandments, just tell you that was the order of the day. For example, if you want to go to study today, where would you go? You go to maybe Europe to study, or go to America, because what is happening today.
Yeah.
I don't know what is going to come, where that is not going to be the reference. Now, how can someone get started in content creation and also in personal development? Because at the end of the day, we are talking of you becoming a better version of yourself. So what do you suggest as the best strategy for one to get started to get the best version of his or herself?
So first of all, you start, I recommend someone starts with meditation. When you meditate, you become the observer of the monkey mind. Sometimes it's out of control. So when you meditate, first of all, I talked earlier about that you're not your mind. You are the witnessing presence. You're the observing consciousness. Your mind is a tool. So when you learn to meditate, you learn to withdraw consciousness. You learn to withdraw energy from your ego. And this energy goes to the witnessing presence. The witnessing presence is the one that is like the driver. The ego is like the car. You can change the car, you can change your ego, you can choose to abandon self-sabotaging habits by molding your ego. But the witnessing presence needs to have power over the ego. So when you identify with your mind, when you identify with the ego, you have no power to change whatever negative habit that you have. when you learn to meditate, you learn to observe the ego without any reaction, without any judgment. You take the power from the ego, and this energy goes to the witnessing presence. This witnessing presence is like a driver in a car. So the driver can choose to change the direction they want to go to. So you meditating is taking control of your mind. Your mind is a tool that's supposed to help you reach to where you want to go. But sometimes when you want to change, the mind can work against you. So meditation, first of all, is the first step. Take at least 10 minutes a day in the morning to sit down and quiet, to sit down in silence and observe your mind. The second thing is about changing negative habits. The moment you make a decision to change a negative habit, let's say it's a New Year resolution that you have a dopamine high. That's why the first 10 days of a new year, people will go to the gym and they're busy. They want to achieve the New Year resolutions. But once the dopamine depletes, once the dopamine goes down, the old rhythm of their habits picks up, and they abandon whatever habits they wanted to adopt. So the moment you want to adopt a new habit or a new skill, repetition is the mother of all skills. So you need repetition, but it will get to a time where the rhythm of this old habit will try to pull you back. Everything has a momentum and it has a rhythm. The moment you try to work to form a new habit, then old habit will just come and sweep you back in. So you need to stay consistent, and you need to realize that the moment you decide to change, something will always come up and pull you back in. This is the old rhythm of your old habit. And the last thing I would say is learn to write down your goals. There's power in writing, paper and pen. Any goal that you want to achieve, you can break down into three parts. Write down your goals and read your goals every night when you go to bed. Read out loud. You can even record and play it for the subconscious mind, for it to download into your subconscious mind. Write down the goals that you want to achieve. Spend time visualizing yourself achieving these goals and the emotion that you feel. So make sure you write down your goals in the present tense and you read out loud what you want to achieve. Make sure you do this for at least 30 days.
All right. Is there any other thing you would like to say to conclude the conversation? Maybe a message of yours or something you want to reinforce as a line?
Yeah. So I would say that we are in complete control of our lives. Like your life right now, there's a million ways or infinite ways it will go. And you have the choice. Nobody is in control of your destiny. Nobody determines how anything in your life will go. Only you have the power to direct your destiny. And directing this power outside of you and waiting for someone to come and save you, or this idea that there's this magic man who's micromanaging us and watching every move, actually it does not do justice to the thing that we have been provided with. We have been provided with so much that if you just sit there and think that there's a person who's micromanaging your life and who's coming to save you, and who's, you are the one who's supposed to save yourself. There are infinite permutations of your life, how your life could go. The choices you make every day direct you towards your destiny, towards the destination. The mindset and the choices you make every single day. Every single choice you make is directing you to a different destiny. If you choose to take a different action every day, a better action and a better, adopt better habits, and a better mindset, you go to higher versions of how your life will turn out to be. You maximize on this amazing gift that we've been given right here. We came here for an experience, and we are in total control of our lives. Nobody is in charge of your destiny but yourself. So you need to take charge of your life. You need to sit down and actually decide that I'm going to change my life. I'm the one who's in control of my life and nobody else.
Winnie Saida, thank you so much for the conversation. It has really been a pleasure here.
Thank you so much. And I'm glad for what you're doing. I think it's a really an amazing thing that you're giving people this chance to express themselves and then at least to reach a wider audience. I think that it's a really an amazing thing. Actually, in future, I'm thinking of also starting a podcast myself too.
That would be lovely.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure you subscribe so you never miss any of our future episodes. Rate and review Obehead Podcast and share with your friends who might need it. I remain Obehead Ewafo. Thank you so much for listening and talk to you in the next episode.